Welcome to another episode of Attention Confidential, where we explore self-reflection, curiosity, and advocacy in a safe container. These three themes are expressed in the following ways, which you'll come to know as the mirror, the magnifying glass, and the megaphone. The original music, as featured on Attention Confidential, was written, composed, and produced by Christopher Colley Biondi, a deaf pianist, composer, and dear friend in Central Kentucky who generously provided his skills and talent to support the launch of this podcast. In support of safety, please be advised that this podcast contains explicit language and direct or indirect references to material which some listeners may find topics are highly personal and intimate, likely to touch on themes including but not limited to abuse, bigotry, body image, disability, mental health, sexuality, and trauma. Please prioritize your safety and the safety of those around you who may be exposed to this material, especially young folks. Please also note this is an ongoing project, which means I am actively engaged in learning while creating. The format, the tools, and skills to produce this material are all new to me. As I build and refine, I ask that you understand there may be kinks along the way. Production snafus, awkward edits, background noise, and because transparency is one of my core values, I should also share that I am using software that includes enhanced features to simplify the editing and post-production process. Any editing of this content, however, this original, organic, human-generated content, is done so at my discretion, specifically to optimize sound quality, not to manipulate, omit, or alter any substantive material in the recordings. All guests have a chance to review the material before it is published so that they can be assured their voices and stories are held and shared with care, treated as sacred things to preserve and pass on. You can find more details about each guest and relevant resources in the show notes for each episode. What makes this program special is that some guests choose to remain anonymous while others choose to disclose their identities. And today's guest has decided to share their identity. A few other things they want us to know about them. First, they use she, her pronouns. She is queer, poly, loves cats, cooking, crafting, creating cocktails, mocktails, costumed events, reading, and chasing waterfalls. Super excited to introduce you to today's guest, Bree. Welcome. Thank you so much for being here. I've shared a little bit about who you are, but I would love to hear from you about yourself, about your work, who you are, what's important to you, anything you want to share with us.
Hi, my name is Bree. I live in Portland, Oregon. I am a recent transplant from the Greater California region, SoCal region. I sew. I've been sewing my whole life. Well, I teach sewing. I've been like passionate about making clothes and things and costumes forever. But a big factor for me is community. Like I lived in LA for 25 years. After moving back from New York, I went to school in New York in the late 90s. And then I settled in LA and I lived in lots of different communities in LA and made friends like across the whole region and worked really hard to just like maintain those friendships and maintain, like, I would have an annual winter party and it was in honor of somebody else that did that for me when I first moved back from New York. And, you know, that was a really great way to like stay in touch and also connect to other people. Going out into different, like the burlesque community was such a great place to meet new people and to bring new people in. Like, Lily Von Stupp is one of my favorite people in the burlesque community in Los Angeles. And one of my favorite people there is a clown named Funny Eddie. And I'm really happy to say I introduced them. And they're still together, like over 10 years later.
You got some matchmaking experience as well, huh?
Yeah.
So you mentioned community, Bree. I know we're going to talk a little bit about that today. As I shared, you know, kind of the structure of the show, we've got
three key themes, right? It starts with self-awareness. So we're talking about the mirror at this point. When you look back on the history of your career, your experience building community, maybe your experience with sewing as well, what is one of the things that sticks out to you? Like, what have you learned about yourself maybe that surprised you? Let's say even coming from LA to Portland.
Thank you for putting me back on track because I just spiraled.
No shame or judgment here.
One of the biggest things that I realized coming here to Portland is how important it is to get out in nature. Like, LA is huge and it has tons of parks. It has museums. It has like a beautiful shoreline with the Pacific Ocean. And it does have waterways, but they're all like concreted in. And whereas here, there's like two giant rivers that meet, the Columbia and the Willamette. Finally, I'm learning how to pronounce that one. And there's waterfalls. Like, where I live, it's so easy to take a drive out and get to the Highway 30, historic Highway 30, and like look at beautiful waterfalls and enjoy like a kind of like a country drive along the way. I didn't realize how much I was missing that because I worked so much in LA. My job was super corporate. And even when I did take the time to go to the beach, like I would have to drive far away to get to a beach that was accessible and clean, really, like that I felt comfortable getting in the water. And that was usually north in like Santa Barbara County or Ventura County. And so I rarely, like if I went to the beach in LA County, it was just like a sightseeing, but not getting in the water.
I've driven through LA a couple of times at this point, and I just, like, I don't envy anyone who has to commute in that area. And just hearing you think of, like, you're trying to relax, you're trying to take a little breath and maybe see some water and some sunshine. It's like, you gotta wait in traffic. Yeah, exactly. You mentioned too the waterfall aspect, that you like chasing waterfalls. So it sounds like maybe that's a new development, or was that something you had experience with before Portland?
No, it was brand new. This is like a friend here took me for a drive like shortly after I had arrived here last year. She's like, let's go like go see some nature and like go look at some waterfalls. I'm like, that sounds cool. And I was like, oh, this is amazing. Like, you can park and some of the waterfalls are right there, and other ones it's like a quarter mile, like a walk, and it's just like walking through a forest of trees and ferns and rocks, and everything is so green. Like, I cannot get over how green it is here. And coming from like concrete jungle, and to just even in my backyard, like all of our neighbors have tall trees, and you can hear the wind rustling in the afternoon, and it's like, oh, feels so good.
I'm thinking about like the social impact of that, you know, like it's something cool that can be enjoyed with community members, you know, among community members, but also the mental health benefits.
Like,
coming from, you know, you mentioned concrete jungle, LA, traffic, nightmare. Like, how's your mental health?
Oh gosh, such a good question. It has improved. First of all, hi kitty. I'm not working 10, 12, 14 hour days. I'm not working straight through the weekend and canceling plans at the last minute because of a work deadline. So that part of my mental health has improved so much. But again, back to nature, like that was something even in LA, like I would definitely make time when I could to get to the water or go to the mountains or, you know, picnic in a park, you know, sort of thing. Like all of these things that involved having green and air and sun and wind. And so here it is like nature is everywhere. And the mental health aspects of that, I mean, I look forward to seeing the buds on the trees and the plants. And I'm not on antidepressants anymore. I'm not taking an anti-anxiety medication. I mean, it's twofold why I'm not. I also haven't dealt with the medical system, but I also don't feel like I need them anymore, which is kind of groundbreaking.
Yeah, vitamin D and access to water, that's something we share. I came to learn that about myself. I grew up in a landlocked state, right, in Kentucky. And I mean, we had rivers, we had creeks and streams and things like that, but it's not quite the same. Yeah. It's being near the ocean, the air quality and all that.
The air too, the Pacific Northwest, like, because LA, you know, often has like a layer of smog or haze over it. And even though that, like, well, EPA has done a lot to help, which is, we'll get there.
A topic for another day, another episode.
You didn't discuss this, but I will throw back to like in 2020 when in March of 2020, when the call went out to like stay the fuck home, the air in LA was cleaner than it had been in years. It was wild. And I had to keep going. I was considered critical workforce. So I'm still driving to work. I had to carry paperwork with me. And it was very weird because the freeways were empty.
Ghost town. I can't even imagine.
It was wild. It was wild.
Well, I mean, welcome to the Pacific Northwest. Welcome home, right? Your new home.
Every time I drive, even like if I get to go pick up friends at the airport, I take the scenic route along Columbia River so they can see just how, and you get to see Washington and Oregon. And I love that. And every time I go anywhere or I try to take little walkies in my neighborhood and see all the things growing.
I love that. And you know, with the episode will come out in the fall, but we're in springtime right now. You're seeing all of that rain and moisture pay off. Lots of blooms and flowering trees. So you mentioned briefly your experience in the corporate world, which I think is a really nice kind of segue into our next segment, the magnifying glass, which, again, is all about curiosity. So it's kind of taking a deeper look at the details of something. I'd love to hear your reflections on that transition from, first of all, corporate employment in that urban jungle environment, concrete jungle environment in LA, to now maybe more relaxed space. You got some freedom here in Portland. What are you doing? Have you gone into business for yourself? What did you leave the corporate world for?
So yes, I am building my own business here. I came from corporate sewing in LA, and I know we didn't really talk too much, but like I want to point out how sterile it was. The room I worked in was white and gray with bright lighting because we worked on white and gray material. I built spacesuits for a small private company. I was with the company for about 12 years, and 10 years of that was in spacesuit design, development, and production. And I loved what I did. I love my team. I'm so proud of what these people are continuing to push the boundaries and do really good work. But I'm so glad not to be there anymore. I love color. Like you can see my house. I have colorful walls. My clothes are colorful. Even though I'm an old school goth, I'm rainbow goth now, whatever. Leopard print goth today. But I have a sewing studio in my home and I teach sewing. And I also still make my own clothing and costumes. And it is, like I said, it's full of color. I have vintage machines. My kitties get to be part of it. Like they get to inspect all the fabrics. It's very personal. It's very cozy. And if I want to work late at night on a project, I can listen to some music or a podcast. And I feel very safe and like nourished with how I have things set up here compared to like literally you didn't know which station I worked at because there was nothing personal at my job for 12 years. The only indication that I worked there was a name tag that was like printed out. And the last few years, we didn't even have those. There was nothing. There was no indicator that a human being like that had a background was working at that workstation.
It sounds to me like you're coming from like nameless, faceless cog in a giant machine to you are the center stage and focus of what's happening now. Not only in the physical environment and how you physically embody yourself and show up, but like just having agency to be creative and yourself.
And having agency and getting to like, because before moving here, I had to like map out like, where's my furniture going to go so that when they got unloaded, I could be like, oh, that cabinet goes on that wall. And I was like, this living room is so uniquely shaped and because it's kind of like a trapezoid. And I was like, I bet if I set up my sewing stuff in the middle of the room, I could make like a long rectangle of tables and sewing machines so I could use multiple ones like with different colors of thread. Or when I'm teaching, I could have, you know, different students at different machines, you know, and kind of learning on different like things. Although I do a lot of hand sewing for my classes, which is great because like everybody has to start somewhere. That's where I started, you know, when I was a kid.
That, of course, that makes me think of sewing just as a skill in general, as a industry. I think this is a great time to mention we found each other through the Clothes Horse podcast. Yes. So we have mutual interest in slow fashion, sustainability, upcycling, extending the life of clothing, like really caring about what goes into a garment, valuing a garment. So, you know, I know there's been a lot of discourse. There's a lot of research on the clothing and fashion industry, mass manufacturing. You're like the other end of that spectrum. So I'd love to hear any reflections or insights, like things that you've observed, I guess, from the industry, especially having started your own business. Like one example that comes to mind, like especially with the growth and popularity of fast fashion since the mid to early, you know, early 2000s, like
it is
people's perceptions of what is valuable and what is, you know, worth an investment. Yeah, exactly. Disposable. You want to talk a little bit about that?
I do. It is wild to see the shift in people's perceptions. Like clothing cost more in the 90s than it does now. And I learned that specifically from Clothes Horse. Like Amanda has done so much good research, but I've been involved in clothing making, you know, since the 90s. I started working as a sample maker at Patagonia. Before that, I did Renaissance costuming. So like I have a very deep background in knowing like fabric and knowing clothing, but I didn't realize how bad, how crazy, because like I could see it. Like I don't buy a lot of clothing at the stores. I've always kind of, since high school, when I started making my own clothes out of like, you know, curtains from the thrift store. So I didn't follow fashion per se, but I could see it. I mean, I went to school for fashion, so I had to pay attention. So I had to know, but that was like the upper echelon, like really fancy things I'll never be able to afford. But so back to like the fast fashion and sewing is like some people think that humans aren't involved in the making of clothing, which blows my mind. Like, yes, there's a lot of automation, but every single garment, no matter how simple it is, has had dozens of hands on it, from the making the fabric, cutting the pieces, and each step as it goes through different machines, because each machine does a specific stitch in an industrial factory. You don't have a home machine that does a zigzag and a straight stitch. You have straight stitch only, zigzag, overlock, flat lock, cover stitch, especially stretch materials. Mm-hmm. Such a specialty skill. And people don't realize that sewing is absolutely skilled labor. And we are undervaluing most of the people that are involved in it, unless they're men designing. Sewing has been relegated to quote unquote women's work, and women's work throughout the centuries has been relegated to like, oh, that's what a housewife does. That's what a woman does at home. Even in like back in school, the 90s, I ended up specializing in accessories. So I did like shoes, belts, handbags, gloves. I'm a self-taught corsetier, and I did millinery. But the woman who ran the program at FIT, her name is Ellen. She's phenomenal. And she's like, this is not happy hands at home crafting with like popsicle sticks and yarn. She's like, that is a valid thing. Crafting is valid. We are making actual products to be used, to be worn, to be reused and reworn. You make shoes that will last. You make a handbag that is quality and will last. We are using good materials. We are using good techniques. She was very, very like, she really wanted to get people away from them. Like, oh, how quaint. You're making something crafty.
Right.
Like shoes are not crafty. They are hard to make.
Right. Hard work.
And if you want good quality, you know, like, the like good, fast, cheap, pick two.
Right. It makes me wonder, so that was the 90s. It makes me wonder what the education in today's classrooms and the fashion space, maybe even at FIT, looks like. Because if I were to make any like assumptions based on the kind of cultural signals and information, it's like we're emphasizing no longer quality, it's about quantity and output, and how cheap can we make it? How much can we make using the least amount of material funds? Yeah. How can we exploit or bypass or shortchange, cut corners to save a dollar?
It is wild. And I will say, like, I because I'm still in contact with FIT. I still talk, you know, work a little bit with some of my former professors. They're still doing like the upper echelon. Like, you're going to be like Dolce & Gabbana or Dior. And I'm like, when you're turning out hundreds of students a year, like, not a lot of them are going to get to the upper echelon.
Yeah.
They're going to be really lucky if they're working at like mid-level companies. But the bummer is like those mid-level companies are absolutely shifting into fast fashion. Like the stuff that you buy at Tommy Hilfiger, Navy, like Old Navy, you're going to be paying like $3 for a tank top, which is fucking garbage, because fabric, cutting, sewing, packaging, shipping, all of these things, how the fuck does it get from another country to America with who they're getting paid pennies?
If at all.
Slave labor. And the thing is, the mid-level and the upper-level companies are all following that fast fashion model of undercutting the people at the bottom rungs of the beginning of the stages of making the thing, of like making the fabric, cutting it, all the sewing involved. There's absolutely slave labor happening in so many countries, and it is so scary. And it's so opaque. Like, these companies hide behind shells. They hide behind like, oh, well, we contracted with this factory to make blah, blah, blah. But that factory subcontracted to two other factories, and those places are not legit, and they're not treating their people right.
Full condition.
Really stressful. Like, if something is cheap, somebody didn't get paid. I'm absolutely quoting Amanda there. Like, she has so many good sound bites. I have learned so much listening to her. And she's like my comfort, like when I'm sewing late at night or if I'm stressed about something and I'm working on a project, I absolutely am like, I'm going to listen to Amanda because I'm going to learn something good. She's going to have something cool on the web or on the pod. And that's, of course, where I met you, Maggie, which, and I just was like, it was a Halloween episode that made me so happy because I was like, Halloween's my favorite.
Same.
And yeah. I also like, I've avoided the like crappy costumes for years. I'm lucky I sew and I can pull from my closet, or I can like, I know we're trying to stay like, fast fashion is such a big one. And I'm like, I could talk about it for hours. But I will say this weird thing about my sewing. When I make a costume, I think about the longevity and how useful it can be and how many times can I wear it.
Yes.
And I learned that from another person I follow in New Zealand, Momi Oaks, and I'm probably mangling her name, but she has this group patterns and she does historical stuff. And she's like, if I can't wear it 12 times, I won't make it. I'm like, that's so good. And so I think about that with my historical stuff. And I also try to make it work for burlesque. If I ever get back into burlesque, I'm like, maybe I want to do an 18th century striptease again. So I better make this costume come apart.
Hey.
So it's just like, you know, longevity is so important in anything that we like, build quality in, make it. And like, I'm going to kind of what I'm coming to realize, what I'm teaching is slow sewing. So it's the opposite of fast fashion. I'm not like, knock it out, get it done, throw it on your body and go. It's like, make it look good. Make it fit nice. Like, I do a lot of my sewing with single needle, straight stitch, and a pair of pinking shears. They are wash and wear repeatedly. Like, I made 3 flannel dresses this winter, caftans. They have been my mainstays. I just, you know, wear it a couple times with the slip underneath it, wash it, wear it several times with the slip, you know, and like rotate through those 3 dresses and like a handful of other winter things. I bought 1 sweater dress this winter because I was trapped in Denver.
Oh, yeah. Much colder there.
In New Mexico, and my flight got delayed for 4 days and I didn't have access to my luggage. So I had to buy, I bought like 3 dresses and 3 pairs of tights and some bathroom things.
Nice.
But anyway, that's slow sewing related to slow fashion, which is like, be mindful, be thoughtful. How can you, you know, like wear it and use it and enjoy it, and be proud of it. Like, be proud of your, like, what you're making or finding. And, like, you know, absolutely, like, thrift store. Like, I have made some gorgeous historical costumes out of, that delights me because the quality of the fabric is so good.
Yeah, when they say, like, they don't make it like they used to, it's true. Yeah. As you were talking about your experience in fashion school and kind of almost this hierarchy, there's, like, the upper echelon,
yeah,
you know, where all the money and the power and the visibility and the fame and all that is. Red carpet, exactly. Fashion week. And then there's everything else and everyone else.
Attention Confidential is sponsored, produced, and distributed by Self Magnitude LLC, an ethical microbusiness on a mission to transform how you see yourself. It is hosted by Maggie Green, personal brand and style strategist for weirdos and queerdos of all ages and gender expressions, who is also the face and voice behind Self Magnitude, helping people feel seen since 2020. If you're looking for support on embodying all aspects of your identity and showing up as your radically authentic self in person, in print, and online, please visit Maggie's 100% DIY website at selfmagnitude.com.
So, as you're thinking about this business, like, who are the people that need to talk to you, that need to connect with you? Like, are you looking for fashion students? Are you looking for hobby home sewists? Are you looking for beginners? Like, what gap are you filling so that we can help spread the word?
So, the name of the business is Sew Your Dreams with Bree. And I want to meet everybody who wants to sew. I want to meet them where they're at. I mentioned earlier, a lot of my classes have been hand sewing because a lot of people didn't grow up learning how to sew from their mom or their dad or their grandma or their grandpa or an aunt or uncle. And so they're, you know, hitting adulthood and they're like, I can't sew a button on my shirt. And I'm like, let's fix that. So let's sew your buttons on. Let's fix that popped hem or that popped seam. So I definitely, you know, start at the beginning. And then I also, but if somebody's like, I want to make a Marie Antoinette gown for a fancy dress party, I'm like, let's start by making a set of coasters. And then we're going to work our way up there.
Right.
So I offer like really customized classes. I do a lot of stuff on Zoom, which is fantastic because I can have students anywhere. Can tune in and they get little packet of recordings of like some of the techniques that I cover in the class. But yeah, it's like start where you're at. And one of the really important classes I'm building is alterations, because the human body is a unique thing. And clothing, especially fast fashion, is made off of a dress form. If it's even lucky enough to be made off of a dress
block
photo, let's make this dress and not have darts or any shaping, you know, things on it. So alterations are, I think, super important. And especially the clothing should fit your body. And a good friend of mine was like, you should, he's like, you know, food for thought. He's like, you know, a lot of people who have transitioned have a hard time getting clothing to fit their body. And I'm like, MG, you're so fucking right. So like if you're like, okay, this is who I am, but my pants are fitting my butt weird, or like my shoulder line is not making me happy and these shirts or whatever, like let's get in there and get those garments to fit you where you're like, I feel great. I think that is such an important thing. Because like I've, you know, over the years I've worked with so many different people, so many different styles and sizes and things. I've always been such a fit you where you are today. Like, yeah. And even if with myself, like when I make my costumes, I'm just like, I'm fitting them to who I am today. And like, I do leave leeway so that I can let it out, or take it in. Or I'm also learning, I don't like trains on my historical costumes. So I'm retrofitting and getting rid of the trains because I don't like getting stepped on.
Yeah.
But like, so I think alterations, I think hand sewing is super valid. People don't want to go past that, and that's okay. I know a burlesquer who sews all of her burlesque costumes by hand. Corsets, ball gowns, fringe, tassels, everything. Can I name her?
If you'd like.
Out of Nevada is bomb ass, and she makes beautiful stuff. I've known her for years. She's one of the reasons I got into burlesque back in the day, and we're still friends. The other thing I'm going to throw out there with my sewing is that I host like Zooms. This also goes into community. I host like monthly Zoom social hangouts, and half the time, like half the people on there are doing hand crafting, like embroidery or setting grommets, or, you know, I was sewing up a set of coasters for like a demo class thing. And we just hang out and chit chat on Zoom for a couple hours. It's super nice, you know, and that is like a good community building thing for me, because like I've been a little, you know, isolated here. It's hard to make friends as a grown up.
Yes. And a new kid in town.
So like doing the Zooms has been nice because you don't have to like physically leave your house to go anywhere. And that can be, you know, if you don't drive, that's a, you know, an obstacle, you know.
the barrier to access.
Exactly, you know, so that, and I also host, like, once a month, I do a crafty day at my house, which, and I will say here is cool. Like, there's a bus line that goes right in front of my house. So for non-drivers, like, that's a, they can, you know, use the public transit to get to me because I'm kind of on the outskirts. But I've had some really cool, like, crafty days where everyone brings a project and I'll have, like, some stuff on hand. Like, we did, like, Valloween in February.
What a dream. I'm actually pissed I didn't think of that. You're amazing.
I had, like,
so fun.
And then, like, bats and spider web stuff to, like, make cards with.
Valloween. Okay, that is brilliant.
Found it online. Like, okay. Somebody else, like, gotcha. I don't get to own that word, and I don't want to own it anyways. I want everyone to enjoy Valloween because yes. I love Halloween, and Valentine's Day is, like, dorky, but it has pink in it, so I'm like, okay, I'm in. Hats in pink, I'm in.
Such a great contrast and combo. I know we want to talk about community, and we definitely are going to do that. Something that you brought up that I just want to, like, go back to and kind of share to give listeners something to think about. You brought up alterations,
yeah.
Right? With my clients who I work with, supporting them on discovering their personal style, like, not everyone knows what it is. Yeah. Of course, fit challenges always come up, and it's like, it's an unlearning process where we've been taught that you just buy it now and you wear it now. And, you know, we blame ourselves for not a garment failing us and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I'm really, like, champion, and there's probably even a stronger word, like, crusader at this point. Like, I am preaching the value and importance of tailoring and alterations. Like, a lot of the sourcing that we do is from thrift stores. So we're looking at existing garments.
Mm-hmm.
If you encounter a fit issue, like, it's not about going up or down a size necessarily. Like, the proportions are all messed up. They're not unique to you. So the idea of, first, I want to clarify too, you're not doing, like, on-demand sewing for people, like, creating garments.
I want to empower people to have the skill sets themselves and to explore. And, like, it's okay to make mistakes. It's okay to, like, maybe the, and this is why, like, I've mentioned coasters a few times. I have a full course class that starts with, like, how to hand sew. Like, you make some samples with cotton fabric. And then if you want to get into machine sewing, we have a whole section of machine. But the projects that we make, we don't pick a silk ball gown. Maybe pick a pair of, not denim, because denim's hard to sew, but maybe a pair of twill weight pants, something lighter weight.
Pajamas
or a button down or a vest, something in a firm, stable fabric, but not as heavy as denim and not stretchy or silky. Like, stretch is a specialty thing, but, like, build your skill set. Start with something. I'd like to start small and attainable.
Thanks.
Build those skills. Build the muscle memory. Like, threading a needle is hard.
Yes.
And it's disheartening. There's a great diagram of a sewing machine that's, like, all the things are misnamed. And the bobbin area is called the cry hole.
Yes.
And I'm like, accurate. So when I'm teaching somebody the parts of a machine, I'm like, welcome to the cry hole.
Yes.
We're going to wind a bobbin today. They're like, fuck.
Yeah.
You're going to hate it. And eventually you won't. 30 years later, you won't. But, you know.
Emphasis on skills building and empowerment resonates with me so deeply. Like, I often tell my clients, like, not many people come back for additional, like, another go, because it's like, my objective is to help you discover those things in the outset so that you can go off in the world and do it on your own.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
It's actually a compliment if I don't get repeat customers. So it's like, cool, you got it. Like, you're on the DIY track now. I just wanted to bring that up, the importance of alterations and tailoring. I think we're going to see a lot more growth in that area.
We need to. As clothing gets shittier and shittier coming out of factories, like, they're not lasting as long. And exactly. So, like, you're going to have to mend. You don't have to, but I highly recommend mending them. Or if you're buying secondhand, like, the thread might be a little giving way.
Reinforce
it. So it's like, reinforce the, the thread. Like, fabric takes longer to break down than thread in general, depending on the materials. I will throw a quick nerd science fact out there. When I was at Patagonia, they did tons of wear testing, tons of fabric testing. Everything was really meticulous, really detailed, and they really thought things through where the shirt sleeve, the seam allowance would be folded up onto the body and top stitch so that if you were in a situation where your sleeve got torn off, the armhole would still have integrity. And also, they scaled the thread to be at approximately 60% strength to the fabric because it's easier to replace thread than to repair a tear in the material.
That is brilliant.
Yeah.
It's got me thinking about tension and performance fabric and, mm-hmm. you know, clothing is meant to be worn and function and move. It's
and
so
lived
cool.
in, you lived know, in. Yeah. Lived in and enjoyed. And it's okay, like, it's okay if it starts to look weathered, or I save my fabric scraps. So if I do get a tear or a big stain, I can like replace, you know, part of a garment. I have stuff in my closet that's 30 years old.
I don't know if you heard that, listeners. She has things in her closet that are 30 years old. Just consider your own wardrobe. Is there even a single piece in there that's 10 years old? Like, things just don't hold up like they used to, but they can.
They can. And you can take a vintage, or not vintage, but like the secondhand stuff. And again, it comes back to like skills and learning and patience and making something well, you know, or finding things that are made well. And, you know, and going to throw out laundry. Laundry and care is super important.
There's another clothes horse plug. Amanda, I know you're listening. We love you. Yeah. We appreciate your work.
Of the laundry sodes. They are so informative.
I might include that as a resource in the show notes for folks who want to know how to make their clothing last longer.
Such good information. Like cold water wash, y'all. Hand wash. Those little mesh bags that you can put your clothes in. Game changer.
I brought one for this traveling that I'm doing right now. And I was joking with my partner, like, it's for delicates. It's like for underwear and things like that. But I was like, I'm going to make sure and put my socks in here.
Yes.
Because if they go in two at a time, they're going to come out of that bag, presumably two at a time. I don't know.
Yes.
But
yes,
get a mesh bag. They're very useful.
Love them. Love them.
I think we can probably move on to the megaphone. This is kind of the big finale. It's a chance to stand on your proverbial soapbox, about what is important to you. And it sounds like, you know, spoiler alert, we've hinted at community a bit.
Yeah.
You had 25 years of history of robust, active community in LA. You've been in Portland now for a year. Happy anniversary, by the way. Where are you now in terms of community? What have you learned? What are you seeing that's challenging? And maybe what advice or insights might you give another new kid in town?
Give yourself grace and have patience first. It is hard. Like I said earlier, it's hard to make friends as an adult, but it's not impossible. I have absolutely made friends here on my own. Like, I moved here, you know, with my best friend. We got a duplex together, and it's the best thing ever. And I'm so grateful. I have her next door, but she does work a lot, and I can't just like pop over like, let's have coffee. She's like, I'm on a call with, like, you know, a client. So like, I can't just bug her all the time. So I had to like branch out. And so here, I have absolutely utilized online sources. Like, social media has been so helpful in like finding groups like vintage sewing machines, vintage costuming. There's one here that's like really catered to like women, and women presenting people, where you can like post anything like, within, you know, you can't be a dick, but if you're like, hey, I'm looking for like a new medical person, or like, would anyone like to go to the park next Saturday and go for like a little hike around the lake, or, and so it's just very community minded. So I've made some, you know, contacts and gone out to events with people from there. I've gone to some burlesque shows here and like, you know, talked to people. And it's scary, but like, I'm getting better at it, because I've gotten better and better about self-advocating about like what I need, or like my business. And so I'm also making myself post about my business on those social groups to see if people want to be, you know, students. The Zoom thing is so big. Like for me, I know it's something that was big in the pandemic, but I've always been grateful that I can see people on a screen and like have a cup of tea or a glass of wine, depending on what time it is, and like chit chat, you know, on a medium where everyone can be comfortable in their own spaces. So I use Zoom a lot. I have like once a week, a FaceTime with one of my best friends in San Diego, and we catch up on each other, and it's so nice. And so, but like what I also am trying to do here is like having the crafty days, and I'm going to start now that the weather's getting nice. I'm absolutely going to put together the little coaster kits and start planning some, like, let's go for a walk by a waterfall, bring a picnic. I'll have the kits. There's like little tables. We can sit down and have a little sewing session, you know, or if you're like already got your own embroidery or cross stitch project or something, bring that along. And there's just so many beautiful nature places here that I really want to incorporate that into my community building. And that's like, you know, in LA, I definitely would host. I was a good hostess. I am a good hostess. And yes, like, so I'm going to continue that here. But it was like, and it was a challenge because like LA's big and people would be like from all over, but they knew if they wanted to come to the winter party, they had to struggle through the driving, you know, and it was just fun. And so, yeah, I'm really excited to shift it from like, because in LA, it's like, it's so hot in the summer, nobody wants to do anything.
Yeah.
So the parties were in the winter, but here it's like so rainy. So I'm like, summer is the time to do the things. So
absolutely. It's kind of interesting. You mentioned this, like, it's hard to make friends as an adult.
Yeah. Because we're busy. Everyone's working. Some people have kids and jobs and pets. So it's like, you do have to like parse out your time. And that's where I think that sometimes the online option or like the Zoom or FaceTime is helpful, because you don't have the added step of like, I have to put on pretty clothes, leave my house, get back in my car, drive 20 minutes or half an hour to, and then, you know, like really quick, like third spaces, you know?
Right.
So it's like, you don't always want to have to like pay for food or drinks or go to a loud bar. And that's what I'm so excited about here is there's so many parks. There's so many natural spaces here that I think are so conducive to like having a group gathering, whether it's sewing or like I want to host some tea parties. Like I didn't get to do it last year. I'm hoping to do it this year, which is a come as your favorite decade dress up tea.
Love.
Because like it just scratches my itch. I love to play dress up.
Yeah.
But it also lets other people get creative with like, oh, what did I like, whatever era that is, like rock it and be ridiculous and have a picnic.
There's a theme that kind of emerged out of your sharing about the affinity for decades and costumes, but also like relationship building and community. It takes time.
Yeah.
Time is one of the like most, I guess, finite but precious resources that we have. So like if I had any, as a fellow Pacific Northwest transplant, if I had any advice or insight to offer you, to listeners, like it takes time, right? At the 1 year mark, I think you are so much further along than a lot of people who move out here, you know, especially in the wintertime when everyone is like tucked away, like, you know, hibernating. 25 years is a long time to have established yourself in an area. So I appreciate that you mentioned patience too. Like it's a slow roll, just like with your slow sewing, with slow fashion, friendships, relationships, connections, community, like, you know.
It's built overnight.
Exactly. And it's worth it. The quality and the longevity of the thing in the long term, you know, is a result of that.
Yeah, it's an investment. Like invest in yourself, invest in your people. I will say one of the cool things about being an adult is you recognize the bullshit faster.
Yeah.
Because like, yeah, I know in my 20s, I was like, I'm in West Hollywood, I'm getting friends. And like, oh no, these people are dicks, you know, or jerks, or whatever word you want to use. You know, and now I'm like, this is the good people. I have, you know, or, you know, you can kind of weed out the ones that are not in alignment, you know, with you.
That's huge. Like not only mutual interests, which obviously you're putting yourself out there around the things that you enjoy. That's another kind of piece of advice. Like if you're looking for your people, be more yourself, right? Yeah. Be more openly and visibly and loudly you. And your people will find you. They'll gravitate toward you. But the values alignment is an important piece too. Like you said, West Hollywood, and all I can think of is just like vapid, superficial. Maybe they only care about money and...
Yeah.
I mean, it's not my people. It's not your people, you know?
Yeah. Like, and I will, like, one of the phrases I came up with for LA, and like, especially West Hollywood, but all of LA, I was like, LA is a land of cubic zirconias. You have to hunt to find the rubies, diamonds, and sapphires, but they're there. They're there, but you got to weed through. And like each community is different, you know, but like, you're right. If you put yourself out there, because I just, when you were saying that, I was like, joined the, like, because I love historical costuming, and there's an Oregon Regency group and an Oregon Edwardian group. And I joined their things on Facebook. And I know Facebook is super problematic. I'm mainly on there for connections and anyways, we're not going to talk about
it. Take what's useful and leave the rest.
Thank you. 100%. Because it is a hot nightmare. But these groups do post their events and their event page. And so I went to a tomfoolery April Fool's soiree tea party on Sunday, and it was delightful. I made new friends and I got to talk to people and I got to play dress up and I got to drink tea and eat snacks. Mm-hmm. And it was in a private residence, and like, it was a control. It was like less than 20 people, so it wasn't overwhelming. And because sometimes, like, when you're a stranger, you're like, oh, here's 100 people that I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, oh, 20 people in a home, and everyone was so pleasant, and I'm looking forward to more events. And maybe in a year from now, I'll be like, oh, I am now friends with two people from that group. But at least going to a controlled social event with people who are like-minded makes a huge difference. You know, and maybe I won't ever have like a 3 a.m. call person out of that group, and that's okay. These are my tea party and dress up people.
We can't get all of our needs met from one person. And
absolutely,
as dynamic humans with varied and diverse interests, like, community makes sense, right?
Yeah,
absolutely. It's gonna happen.
And that's a good point, the diversity, because like in LA, like, you know, I had people from this, you know, group, this group, this group, this group. I'm moving my hands all over the place, people. But anyways, I had all these, but they would all come together for like, I also would do a big birthday party for myself in the summer. I'm a summer baby. And so all these walks of life would crisscross paths and then like branch out and like make new friendships. And I loved seeing that. And so I'm a big fan of like I said, the 3 a.m. phone call, like there's only one or two people, but they like dress up and go to a tea party. There's more.
Yeah.
The people that want to go to a park and sew, that's another group. Like, mm-hmm. And there's all these like little circles, and they kind of interlock, and then you form new pathways. As each circle bumps into each other, you can find a new path to more people. That's kind of how I look at it.
I love that. And kind of just like circling back, kind of tying it all together. We mentioned, of course, we discovered each other through Clothes Horse. Media, resources, content, like that is a way through the web to kind of find people as well.
Absolutely.
Which reminds me, like, as far as, you know, actionable things that we might share today, calls to action, I feel like the most obvious one is
The Clothes Horse. It is such a good podcast. Also, follow her on Instagram. So much good information. And there's good dialogue. Like I always read the comments on her posts, but she, like, they're really beautiful and creative and fun posts with important information. Like, I love how she puts it together with like the vintage kitties and horsies and things. But like, I love listening to that podcast. I listen to a lot of history podcasts and sewing podcasts. And first, like, that's kind of like a convergence of like knowledge, history, sewing, action. All these things kind of come into this like perfect pinnacle. And yeah, I listen a lot.
This is the unofficially the Clothes Horse Superfan episode promo. So definitely listen to Clothes Horse. Is there anything else, maybe relative to community or relative to fashion or nature or mental health, anything that we've talked about today that you want to kind of leave listeners with, like things to think about, things to do on their own.
Remember to breathe. Remember to breathe. And if you can grow something, even if it's like a little flower in a pot on the windowsill, but growing and nurturing something, especially if you live in a big city or you're not near like a easy access to big nature, like growing a little something nature in your home or room or wherever is really valuable. And peaceful.
I know you mentioned self-advocacy earlier in the conversation, and the intersection of that with nature makes me think of, like, there's kind of a metaphor. If you're growing a plant, whether it's from seed or you buy a little start from the store and grow it, like feeding it, watering it, caring about it, tracking the growth, there's a metaphor for self-care there, I think. Like, it's kind of a mirror for caring for yourself. You can learn things about yourself through that experience.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Bree. Once again, Sow Your Dreams with Bree. I'll include the direct link in the show notes so you can check out Bree and her business and her work. If you're in the Portland area and any of the things that we've talked about today, including cats and crafts and costumes.
Historical nerdery.
Yeah, there's someone out there looking for you and wants to talk with you, build community with you, maybe sew alongside you as well. Thank you, Bree. I just feel so honored to even have this conversation. I know maybe you alluded to it, but we're in your home. So I want to say thank you on the record for having me and welcoming me into your space. It feels really special to be here and share physical space with you after only interacting in virtual environments, pretty much.
Have you here. Like, I love entertaining, and I especially love like small entertaining where I get to actually talk to people. So like the one-on-one is truly my favorite, because then we are each other's undivided attention, except when my cats get in the way.
Which, please, we love that. Like, you know, more cats, the better. It's intimate. I mean, it feels really,
yeah,
really special and intimate. Thank you.
That's all for this episode of Attention Confidential, but of course the conversation doesn't end here. I encourage you to keep exploring, keep questioning, and most of all, keep sharing your stories. If today's conversation spoke to you, please pass it on. And if you have a story of your own you'd like to showcase, I am here and ready to listen. You can find all past and future episodes at selfmagnitude.com/podcast. And until next time, remember this, your voice matters.